on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, November 11th, 2015 edition of InvestTalk. And on this Veterans Day, we want to acknowledge the service of the veterans who may be listening. And those of us who have never served in combat can't fully comprehend your experience and sacrifice, but we can express our appreciation. So thanks to all of our service members out there on this Veterans Day. Now, within the span of 7 or 8 years, anyone who has been investing in the stock market has experienced some sort of traumatic deterioration in the markets. That's just how markets work. They go in cycles. So you have many years when they're up, and usually actually the down times are quick and sudden and relatively short compared to, you know, the bull markets. And it's hard to understand and grasp those experiences. We get that. And it can be life-altering and alter our sense about investing risk and reward. And we've seen firsthand how these things can quickly go bad. And just, it doesn't seem like it. But, you know, 2008 wasn't that long ago. It was dramatic. But so many people are now becoming complacent, I think, with the market. That just goes up, and there's not a lot of bad things. We saw some big volatility in August, and that's really the most we've seen in a while, in a long time. For years, really, since 2011. Now, who could have imagined that the California real estate market could sink into depreciation? People couldn't imagine that back in 2005. Everyone thought, it's California, no, it's infallible. Everyone wants to live in California. Well, that's an oversimplification of that asset class. And investors are prone to that a lot, is oversimplification of how to describe something. Describe an asset class, an investment. So we all know firsthand about risk. So who could blame us, really, for being a little weary of certain assets? And that's understandable. And you should be, to an extent. But you also shouldn't go so far the other way that you're too scared to invest. We talk about this all the time. It's understanding both sides of the equation. Understanding the pros and the cons, the risks and the rewards. And too often, people focus on one or the other. And a recent survey has revealed that the state of mind of the average investor these days, and here are some of the findings. Nearly half of all investors believe the U.S. equity market will experience a correction, I mean, drop of 10% or more, or a bear market by the end of the year. Are you in that half? Now, investors were asked to attach a movie title that best describes how they feel about the market today. And investors choose Dazed and Confused as the movie title. And that's understandable. I think everyone was dazed by 2008, dazed by the rally that's happened, confused on why and how it all unfolded. And that just shows the complexity of the markets today and the economy today, the globalized economy, and also the massive intervention from the Federal Reserve. something that we also haven't experienced. And their involvement, while I think it's pretty simple for a lot of people, it can be perplexing to really understand how they've meddled in our financial system. Now, investors are more bearish than any quarter in the past 2 years, which is pretty interesting. Now, that was a survey conducted by E-Trade Financial Corp. It's from Streetwise, which is E-Trade's quarterly tracking study of experienced investors. Now, what's your state of mind today? Are you in the majority? You kind of weary? You excited? You bullish, bear? What are you? Are you thinking more positively looking forward? Now, our job as an investment advisor and portfolio manager is to help our clients enjoy the potential gains from the market, but also have a plan to minimize the risk. And the risk is that is inherent in the market. And at certain times, risk is higher than others. And of course, that's your job too for your portfolio, and we're here to help you in any way we can. What are your questions for us today? Dollar cost averaging, you've heard it recommended, and how do you do it? Diversification can help weather storms, but what is the formula for being truly diversified? A lot of people think they're diversified when they're really not. And do you have a question about the market, how to do it yourself, tools you need, etc.? We want to hear from you, and we'll go straight to your topic when you call in. And we're always here to help. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. And let's take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
I was curious. I'll be working next year. I'll be 62 years old. And near the end of the year, I'll be getting my Social Security. And I was wondering, how can I invest that so as not to pay such a large penalty for working and getting Social Security at the same time?
How to invest that while getting such a... Well, it sounds like you're trying to avoid some taxes. Right? Now, you could put that into an IRA. You're 62. I would wait to get Social Security. I would wait much longer than 62. You can get it at 62, but you should really wait until the full retirement age, 66, 67, depending on your age. And really, till 70, if you can, that's a much better strategy. And you're still working, so why take it? So I think the number one thing is don't take Social Security yet. It's pretty simple to me. Now, they were highly touted many years ago, commodity prices tended to move in the opposite direction of stocks. That's how they were touted. They were less volatile and they were profitable during high inflationary times. But what went wrong? Why, since then, since a report came out in 2004 about the benefits of using commodities to diversify a portfolio, they've really been a drag. But does that mean you should abandon them? Are they bad investments? I'm going to get to that. I think there's two ways to think about it, and both have merits. So it's one of our talking points today, but I also have some other things I want to discuss. One is 5 real estate mistakes retirees make. I wanted to get to this yesterday, but I did not, so hopefully I'll get there today. Carried interest. This is a loophole in our American tax code, and I want to cover that because I don't think a lot of people understand what it is. I know this, for some people, might be getting political, but I don't want to get political with it. But I think it's important for people to understand what it is because it's talked about so much. What does it even mean? And is it good policy? And I'll give you my take. And then VA loans on this Veterans Day. Are VA loans getting more popular, less popular? Why? Are they good? Are they bad? Etc. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. What are you thinking about? What questions do you have? Are you thinking about a particular company, a sector, a way to manage your portfolio? Maybe it's something you own that you think maybe I should sell it. Are you worried about the market, the bond market, interest rates, the Fed? So much to talk about on this Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. But quickly, let's get to the market. The Dow closed down 56 points, the NASDAQ was down 16 points, and the S&P was down 7 points. And I've never seen this, but all three of those major indexes were all down 32 basis points, meaning 0.32% for the day. I've never seen that, where they all were the exact same decline or increase. I've never seen that. It was always have some difference, but today they were all down 0.32%, so a very modest down day. Now, you helped pick the topic, so why not join us next week for our November 18th webinar? It is free, and many said that they wanted more information on building a strong portfolio and finding strong dividend-paying stocks. So join Steve and myself November 18th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time for this one-hour free webinar. You can register right now on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. I'm a listener on your podcast and had a question on a couple of ETFs. Looking at Vanguard Healthcare, VHT, and also the XLB Healthcare Select. Wanted to get your thoughts on when, if I had to pick, when to start investing in and at what entry point, and overall, which one do you think be better? I could get the Vanguard commission-free. I don't know if that would make a difference. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at two healthcare ETFs, both very low expense ratios. And the big question is, when should you get in? Now, this is the biggest issue right now with healthcare. Is they're lumped, healthcare ETFs and sector is lumped in with biotech. And the biotech sector is a massive bubble that is starting to pop. It really is. And so you're going to have that weight on the healthcare sector. That's why I wouldn't, be getting into it anytime soon. I would wait until really panic sets in the biotech sector, and I think it's just starting. You're just starting the downtrend, and I think there's a long way to go. It was in a long bull market, and you're going to have probably a pretty painful bear market coming up, and so that's really going to weigh on things like this. And you can just look at, for example, VHT, the Vanguard ETF, which is the lower expense ratio of the two that you looked at. And I think you said you could buy it commission free. So I would, yeah, if you can buy commission free, low expense ratio, that's the one I would go with. They're both pretty similar. But for example, the third biggest weighting in VHT is Gilead Sciences, which, you know, is not a bad company, but it is levered to just one type of drug, and you know it has a lot of issues. And the price of the drug is too high, and that's getting scrutiny. And the whole industry is starting to get scrutiny. And I think the growth that was coming out of there is going to be really scrutinized, and it's going to start to kill a lot of these stocks, and they're going to go much lower. It doesn't mean they're going to go out of business, but a lot of growth has been built into them, and they're starting to fall out of bed. And I think that buying drugs and raising prices dramatically is starting to die because people are catching on to their game, and it's just really a bad policy to have, and not a good way to build wealth over the long term or build a good company over the long term. So I would not buy them anytime soon. Now, our Invest Talk number is 888-99-CHART. Can you say your retirement portfolio today truly affects your risk tolerance? One way to determine that is to use our free risk analysis tool. It's free right there on investtalk.com.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. The trick is turning an overload of investing information into a long-term investment strategy that will allow you to achieve your financial goals. How to design the perfect portfolio. That's our talking point for Thursday's podcast. We hope you can join us then.
commodities. Let's talk a little bit about commodities. And back in 2004, commodities really started to, as an investment and as a diversifier, it became kind of the hot topic. And why was that? It was because two Yale University professors published a report, Gary Gordon and Gertz Ronhorst. I don't know if I'm saying that right. They said that between 1959 and 2004, you could return roughly the same, get the same returns from commodities as you did from stocks with less volatility. And they also were diversified because they moved in the opposite direction of stocks, and they did well during high inflationary times. And so what happened was, Wall Street took this and ran. And why did they love it? It's because this was a new product. It was something else for them to sell. A new way to get people's money in the door. And so the mantra became, you need to have commodities as 10, 20% of your portfolio. And that would mean that you were more diversified. And many mutual funds were launched, exchange-traded funds, etc. But the problem is, since then, they've really been a disaster. And what I'm talking about are commodities. When you're investing directly in commodities, I'm not talking about commodity companies, I'm talking about commodities. And so from 2004 until, you know, this year, October 26th of this year, really the commodity index has done terrible. Now, does that mean you now shouldn't have commodities in your portfolio? No, that's not what I'm saying. What this shows to me is that when everyone else thinks this is the next greatest thing, you should be weary. When everyone else is throwing money at it, you should be suspect. History has shown this time after time after time. And why have commodities done so poorly? Well, one is that the study was flawed. Okay? The study was flawed. When you look back, he looked at 35 different commodities. But going back to 59, a lot of those commodities weren't even traded. He's talking about futures. Commodity futures is what he was talking about. They weren't traded that far back. They weren't traded until the late 70s. And they weren't in the same weighting. So they weren't liquid enough. So all this money went into wheat and soybeans and, you know, all these commodities that weren't nearly as liquid as oil and copper and gold. And then also, in 2005, $5 billion were in these type of commodity tracking funds. And 5 years later, that was total was $125 billion. And by 2013, it was $300 billion. And this was too much money going after too small of an arena. And what it did was actually change the dynamics of the industry. Whereas before, the producers used to have to, they would want to sell their product later, knowing that, okay, I'm planting seeds and I'm going to grow this much, say, corn, and it's going to be ready for sale 3 months from now. I want to make sure that I have that sold already. And usually that was at a lower price, right? Because they're willing to take a lower price for that guarantee that they're going to be able to sell it. But now with all this money in, it actually changed the dynamic because all these people and all these funds were investing in futures. And now the price going out was higher. and it changed the dynamics of the industry. But at the end of the day, what you have to understand is everything goes in a cycle. And no, investing directly in commodities is not a good investment. I agree. But what you should be investing in is commodity companies. And I'm not saying all the time, but I'm saying you need to find the good ones. The good ones, the ones that know how to allocate capital, that have great assets, that make the money off of producing commodities. Those are the companies you should be investing. I hear people call up and ask about ETFs like USO, which just tracks the oil, oil price. No, don't buy USO. Go buy an oil company. You'll do a lot better. Okay, so no, commodities are not a bad investment. Yes, commodities futures are a bad investment, but commodity companies are not. They are good investments at the right time. Now, we've reached the half hour mark in the hour. If you're a podcast listener and you would like to talk to me live, Invest Talk is produced every weekday afternoon from 4 to 5 Pacific time, or our line is open anytime at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk for Wednesday, November 11th. A reminder to use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Just scroll down the page until you see the heading Free Personal Risk Analysis. It's also important to get an answer when you have an important question, so let's hear it. Bring your question now to 888-99-CHART.
Now, we are always here for you, beginner or experienced investor, at 888-99-CHART. Give us a call.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Max from Michigan. Two questions. One is your evaluation of the stock CPPL, looking to buy it long-term. And the second question I have is a stock by the ticker GGB. If you look at that chart, is that a triple bottom, and what does that mean? Thanks. Bye.
All right. He's looking at CPPL. This is Columbia Pipeline Partners. This is a limited partnership that owns and operates natural gas transmission and storage assets. So it is in the it's a master limited partnership. Yields about 4.8%. Let me see what else I can see about it. Modest debt, which is pretty rare for this type of company. Usually there's more debt than that. Let's look at their cash from operations. That's actually, doing okay. Don't hate it. It's fairly cheap. Let me keep looking at this. Never heard of the company. Negative free cash flow and like that. Return on equity is only about 5%. I don't really love it. Payout ratio is modest, so it could raise its payout ratio. That's not too bad. Book value is 0.36 times book, so it's trading very cheaply on a price-to-book basis. I just don't really like it that much. I don't like that massive limited partnership space. I think it's likely going to go lower. I'm looking at the daily chart, and it's bounced a little bit, but nothing tell me the trend has changed. Now, this is probably just a counter-trend bounce. To me, it would have to get above the 100-day moving average. If it gets above the 100-day moving average, I could say I'd give it a 7 out of 10 because of how cheap it is. But the fact that the cash flows are still weak, earnings are falling, growth is not really there, and the chart remains in a downtrend, I would stay away from it. And you're also looking at GGB. And is it a triple bottom? It looks, and I wouldn't call that a triple bottom. That just looks like the attempt at the start of an uptrend. And GGB is a, what is GGB? It's a steel producer, Brazilian steel producer. I wouldn't buy it. Still in a downtrend. It looks like it's just consolidating bearishly. So I would say it's probably going to continue to go lower. So I wouldn't buy either of these. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Justin. How are you?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you can look at a CBS. I'm looking to trade it for maybe a couple of bucks. What do you think?
Huh, CBS. You're just looking to trade it?
Yeah, I bought some today and hoping to get to 5270, somewhere around there, and unload it.
Okay. Let me take a look at this. If you're looking to get it to 5270?
Yes.
I think it could go there. I don't love it. It's already gone a long way, right? It's gone from about $38 and change all the way to 50. What's it close today? $50.30. So
right.
It certainly could have more upside. I don't like the reversal that it had a few days ago. So that's kind of bearish to me. I had a big, big reversal day, and it still hasn't gone above that. I don't really like the trade that much. I think it could get to 5270. I'm not saying it can't. It certainly has the ability to. And it's still in that uptrend, and that trend still is intact. But I'm starting to see some negative signs that I don't really like. So I kind of say, I think there's a lot more risk to the downside if the market continues to pull back than to the upside. So I would keep a tight stop on it if you have a trade in.
Where would you put a stop on that? Any idea?
I would look at like a 60-minute moving average.
Okay.
And I would say the 100 moving average, the 160-minute moving average, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And right now, that's trading at 48. That's about 48 is that stop. Obviously,
right.
As long as it stays above that, it's going to continue to go higher. So, yeah, I would use about that 48 level as my out.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling in. That was CBS. Now, let's talk about five mistakes that many retirees make when it comes to real estate. And, you know, real estate is usually one of the largest assets any retiree has or any couple has. But it also is an area where there's a lot of emotional attachment involved. And it's very easy to make mistakes. So how do retirees make mistakes due to this emotional nature? One is not downsizing soon enough. And the reason is because a lot of it depends on the market, you know, what type of market you're in. You know, right now is a good time to probably downsize because values are up and you can still buy things cheaply and sell your more expensive house, etc. But one of the biggest things is when you downsize is you reduce your overhead cost by a lot usually. And how is that? Well, you usually have less utilities because your house is smaller, so it's easier to heat and cool. You have less lights to power, etc. You probably have less land to maintain, less water usage, etc. So your utilities tend to go down. And also, if you buy a lower priced home, your taxes a lot of times go down. So waiting too long can cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. And not only that, but the savings you can put into investing and earning you money as opposed to just draining money, right? Okay, so what you should also do, like I said, is invest that money. When you do downsize, start investing it and earn some income off of the money you're saving or the money that you've cashed out by downsizing as well. Then also, you should have a game plan. If you are moving to another area, you need to do some research. Understand the tax implications. Sometimes you might move to a different state and you might not know the tax implications. You know that in Texas, the real estate taxes, property taxes, as a percentage, are a lot higher than here in California. You know that? What about other states? What about other counties? Okay? So that's important as well. And then also researching, when you're moving to a new area, what about researching doctors, especially when you're a retiree and you have doctors you need to see? Are the doctors that you're going to start going to, are they going to be in your network? Do you have specific health concerns that you maybe have a specialist for? And also, as you get older, you have to think about, you know, more hospital visits, doctor's visits. Are you going to have those resources for you? So that can be a mistake as well. And then finally, maintaining two homes. Actually, that's not finally. That's the second to last one. Maintaining two homes. That's a big drain on finances. A lot of people think, well, I'm going to go buy this one and I'm going to have two homes. And then when I'm ready, I'm just going to move to the other home and I'll sell this one. And that's all well and good, but managing the running costs of two homes is very expensive. And you need to factor that in. And usually it costs way more in the long run. If you want to downsize, you want to move, just do it once. Don't think that, you know, you need to own two homes at one time because maybe it's a good buying opportunity or it's something that you found that you really want and this is where you're going to retire. Well, if you're going to do it, there's going to be something else that comes along that's even better if you're not ready at that moment, okay? And then finally, having a mortgage. We talk about this all the time. Pay down your debts by the time you retire. Remember, you're going to probably live off Social Security, IRA distributions, savings, pensions, etc. And not having that mortgage is huge. And it can be a big difference between whether you take your Social Security early or later. So really, you should have your mortgage, I think, paid off by the time you're 60. You really should. All right. Now I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. Now Steve is in San Jose today meeting with our listeners, reviewing their retirement portfolios. And you should know that Steve will be in La Jolla, California, December 2nd for individual retirement reviews. Then San Ramon, December 9th. And these are all first come, first serve dates. So reserve your hour before they fill up. And if you live too far from our California offices, you can meet via Skype or even via telephone. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, dynamic growth, flexible management for optimum returns, balanced income, steady yield for the risk averse, and Select Growth and Income Program, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. To find out more about these KPP investment programs, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
My name is Bill. I'm calling from New Jersey. I listened to the podcast, and I love the show. I did have a question about rolling over a 403B. Which is basically the 401k from the thrift savings plan from the federal government. Can that be rolled over into an IRA, a Roth IRA? I look forward to your answer during the podcast show. Thank you.
Roll that into a Roth IRA, but there are tax consequences. So understand that. If you're going to roll into a Roth IRA, there are tax consequences. A regular IRA, no tax consequences. Roth IRA, yes, you will have to pay tax on that money this year. But when you take it out, you won't. Now, what you could do is roll into a regular IRA and then manage that rollover into a Roth if you don't want to do it too much. I see this problem happen a lot. People move money into a Roth IRA and they say, okay, I'll pay the taxes. But what it does is increase their adjusted gross income and now they're in a higher tax bracket. So all of their income is taxed at a higher rate. So talk to your accountant, make sure that you can manage that properly and so you don't push yourself into a higher tax bracket because that doesn't make any sense. And there's ways to do that. And if you need an accountant, we do have great accountants we work with. So go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. Now let's talk a little bit about The VA loan, since it's Veterans Day, this is for all the veterans out there. A lot of people don't know that you are entitled to a VA loan, and VA loans are very popular. They've risen since 1995 from $24 billion outstanding to $124 billion in 2013, but they actually dropped a little bit last year for the first time in many years. Now, what are VA loans? Well, these are mortgages, and they have very low interest rates. They allow for higher debt-to-income ratios and lower credit scores as well. And VA loans are one of the reasons 79% of veterans own their own homes, compared to just 63% for non-veteran population. Now, some veterans think VA loans are somehow inferior to conventional loans, but they really aren't. They're better. You get lower rates. But the problem is that a lot of lenders don't want to deal with it because there's a lot more red tape and hassles to go through for a VA loan. And oftentimes when a veteran calls up a lender, they often pitch them traditional mortgages because they don't want to go through the hassle. And it takes the lender more work and time to process a VA loan compared to a conventional loan, which cuts into their profit. This is one example why I got my real estate license, because there's a lot of shady characters in the real estate game. And we try to help our clients avoid those shady characters. And so if you are a veteran, make sure you take advantage of the VA loan. It's an entitlement. It's a basic entitlement for you, offered to active duty members, reserves, National Guards, veteran service members, and even some surviving spouses as well. They can borrow up to $417,000 without any down payment, so long as it's their principal residence. There's also no minimum credit score as well. And you can even refinance an existing loan using a VA loan. So if you were in the past, you or family member or friend got a traditional loan and they can qualify for a VA loan, I can almost guarantee you, you'll do very well. You save a lot of money if you refinance into a VA loan. Okay, so just a quick heads up, pretty interesting. A lot of people don't know about it, but it is something every veteran, service member, friend or family of one should know about. Now, why not join our InvestTalk Insider List? You'll have instant access to lots of easy-to-read informational sheets on important investing topics, plus valuable lists as well, such as dividend-focused ETFs, commodity ETFs, REIT lists, and many, many more. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to the headline. Sign up for free to become an InvestTalk Insider.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Join Steve and Justin for our next webinar. This one came from our first ever listeners poll, Building a Strong Portfolio with Less Risk and Finding Strong Dividend Paying Stocks. That's what you wanted to know more about. The date for the webinar, November 18th. The time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It is free, but you do need to sign up. You can do that now on investtalk.com.
Time for InvestTalk 101. How do you assess the risks associated with investing internationally? And we're talking about ADRs, American Depository Receipts, and they're an important tool for international investors. Before you can assess risk, you have to recognize the type of risk of these vehicles. Now, first, there's political risk, and you have to ask yourself, you think the government in the home country of the ADR is stable? Political unrest can cause extreme volatility within financial markets. Think of Russia. And I remember one example is Yukos. Anybody remember that? It was an oil company, and Putin had a vendetta against the CEO. And so what did he do? He threw the CEO in jail, and he seized all the assets of Yukos, and Yukos went bankrupt, and investors lost all their money. Happens in South America, right, where Hugo Chavez took over the the assets of companies that were operating there. So it happens where politics get in the way of business and they like to take over things. And so that is a big risk. Then there's exchange rate risk. And this is the currency of the home country and how stable that currency is. Remember, ADRs track the shares in the home country. So if a country's currency is devalued, it will trickle down to that ADR because it's priced in those, in that currency. And this can result in a big loss, even if the company has been performing well, or vice versa. The company could just be doing average or so-so, or not that great, but do well because the currency is doing well. So it goes, cuts both ways. Then there's inflationary risk, and this is an extension of exchange risk. Inflation is the rate in which the general level of price for goods and services are rising in that country, and subsequently purchasing power is falling. And inflation can be a big blow to business because the currency of a country with high inflation becomes less and less valuable each day. And as the case in any financial decision, it's important to thoroughly analyze your potential investments and understand the risks that are involved. So that's Invest Talk 101. Maybe you have some experiences to share. Please get through to us at 888-99-CHART. And you can also send me a note that will come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com. Now, let's answer one more question before we're done today. Get your question to us anytime. You can call 888-99-CHART. That's our 24-hour listener line. And we will answer your question on the next program.
Hi, guys. This is Gary. I'm a podcast caller from Massachusetts. And I'd like to know your opinion on SYK. That would be Stryker Company. Thank you very much and have a great day. Bye.
All right, he's looking at Stryker Company. This is a pretty big medical device name. Let me bring this up real quick. SYK. They develop orthopedic implants, surgical instruments, imaging systems, and operating room emergency medical equipment. You know why I like this company? Because it tends to make more money each and every year. Even in 2009, they made more money than 2008 in the depths of the recession. P's 20, it's a little high for my taste for a company that's growing 8 or 9%. Yields 1.4%. Very modest growth. Very modest growth. But, you know, it's a company, it's a solid company. Return equity is about 14%. Not crazy, but solid. The payout ratio is about 45%. Pretty good. I'm going to say, yeah, I like it. I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10. I don't love it because it's not a big growth, not exciting, but it's certainly a good company. It's not in the biotech space, so it's not lumped in with all those problems there. Now, you might get dragged down in the near term because of what's going on with biotech and how it's going to pull down the whole healthcare sector generally, but they have modest debt. Decent dividend that is growing. They increased it last year. I like it. I don't love it, but I like it. All right, hour is up. Steve Peasley and I thank you for investing this hour with us. Steve will be back here tomorrow. Reminder of his new checkup dates in San Ramon, December 9th. And that will also be in La Jolla, December 2nd. You can reserve your hour by going to investtalk.com, clicking on schedule a meeting. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. Please join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.